the world's great novels. The National Broadcasting Company brings you the third in a four-part version of Emily Bronte's Wuthering Heights, another in our series of books that live the world's great novels.
Well, another week passed. Oddly enough, they go quickly on these bleak English moorlands. I'm not at all sorry I decided to spend a year here. And during the past week, Ellen Dean, my housekeeper here at Thrushcross Grange, has continued her history of my neighbors, of Wuthering Heights and its forbidding master, Heathcliff, of Cathy Earnshaw, who married Edgar Linton and moved from the Heights to the Grange, and of Isabella Linton, Edgar's sister, who became quite enamored of the fearsome Heathcliff when he returned to the moorland country. I'll let Mrs. Dean continue the history in her own words.
Well, as I was saying, Mr. Lockwood, for a time after Mr. Heathcliff's return, I thought he was willing to forget his hurt at Cathy's marrying Edgar Linton and be friends. But little by little, I saw the black demon coming out in him. And then there was that awful scene in the kitchen after Cathy saw Heathcliff kiss Isabella in the garden.
If you like Isabella, you shall marry her, Heathcliff. But do you like her? Tell the truth, Heathcliff. Well, there. You won't answer. I'm certain you don't.
Catherine, I want you to be aware that I know you have treated me infernally. Infernally, do you hear? And if you fancy I'll suffer unrevenged, I'll convince you of the contrary in a very little while. Meantime, thank you for telling me your sister-in-law takes a fancy to me. I swear I'll make the most of it and stand you aside.
How have I treated you infernally? How will you take your revenge?
I seek no revenge on you. That's not the plan. You are welcome to torture me death if it amuse you. Only allow me to amuse myself a little, and in the same style, and refrain from insult as much as you are able. Having leveled my palace, don't erect a hovel and complacently admire your own charity in giving me a home. Cathy, if I imagined you rarely wished me to marry Isabella, I'd cut my throat.
Edgar.
How is this, Catherine? What notion of propriety must you have to remain here after the language which has been held to you by that blackguard?
Have you been listening at the door, Edgar?
I have been so far forbearing with you, sir. Not that I was ignorant of your miserable, degraded character, but I felt you were only partly responsible for that. And Catherine, wishing to keep the friend of her childhood, I acquiesced, foolishly. Your presence is a moral poison that would contaminate the most virtuous. For that cause, and to prevent worse consequences, I shall deny you hereafter admission into this house, and give notice now that I require your instant departure.
Cathy, this lamb of yours threatens like a bull. It is in danger of splitting its skull against my knuckles. By heaven, Linton, I'm mortally sorry you're not worth knocking down.
Ellen, call the men.
No, fair means. If you have not the courage to attack him, Edgar, make an apology, or allow yourself to be beaten. Edgar, I was defending you and yours, and I wish Heathcliff may flog you sick for daring to think an evil thought of me. Well, come on. Strike him, Edgar.
Cathy,
I wish you joy of the milk-blood coward, Cathy. And that is the slavering, shivering thing you preferred to me. Is he weeping, or is he going to faint for fear? Oh, let me out of here before I murder the fool.
Remain where you are, Catherine.
Oh, Edgar.
I wish neither to wrangle with you nor to be reconciled. But I want to know just one thing. Do you intend to continue your intimacy with...
Oh, for mercy's sake. For mercy's sake, let us hear no more of it now. Your cold blood cannot be worked into a fever. Your veins are full of ice water, but mine are boiling.
To get rid of me, answer my question. Will you give up Heathcliff, or will you give up me? It is impossible for you to be my wife and his friend at the same time. And I absolutely require to know which you choose.
I require to be let alone. I demand it. Don't you see? I can't stand anymore. Edgar, please leave me. Leave me.
She then went into a senseless, wicked rage. I must admit, I thought the whole thing feigned, and so did Mr. Linton. She went directly to her room and locked it, and for 3 days would see no one. On the third day, she unbarred her door and asked for more water. I also brought her some tea and toast, which she took eagerly. I still did not think her seriously ill, though she looked thin and wild.
What is that apathetic being doing? Has he fallen into a lethargy, or is he dead?
Neither, if you mean Mr. Linton. He is tolerably well, though continually among his studies, since he has no other companion.
Among his books? Oh, good heaven, does he not know how I'm altered? Is he actually so indifferent about my life?
Why, Mum, the master has no idea you're ill. And, of course, he does not fear you'll let yourself die of hunger.
If I were only sure it would kill him, I'd kill myself directly. Well, in those awful nights, I never closed my lids. I've been haunted here and tormented. I fear I'm losing my senses. And Edgar standing solemnly by to see it over. What in the name of all that feels has he to do with books when I am dying?
But he has no notion of such a thing. You told him you didn't want to see him.
Oh, I'm burning. I wish I were out of doors. Open the window, Ellen. I wish I were a girl again, half savage and hardy and free and laughing at injuries. Why am I so changed? I'm sure I should be myself, but I once among the heather on those hills. Oh, quick, Ellen, why don't you open the window?
Because I won't give you your death of cold.
Oh, you would give me a chance of life, you mean? But I'm not helpless yet. I'll open it myself.
Now, Mrs. Linton, you must not.
Look. I can see the heights from here.
It's only the moon, yes. Miss Cathy. Oh. Wuthering Heights is 4 miles away.
Oh, I see it, I tell you. There's my room with a candle in it. And the other candle is Joseph Skerritt. Joseph sits up late, doesn't he? He's waiting for us. But we must pass Gimmerton Kirk yet. We've braved its ghosts often together and dared each other to stand among the graves and ask them to come. Oh, no, but Heathcliff, if I dare you now, will you venture? If you do, I'll keep you. I'll not lie there by myself. They may bury me 12 feet deep and throw the church down over me, but I won't rest until you are with me. I never will. No,
Catherine, no. What are you raving about? Why are you out of bed?
Sir, my poor mistress is ill and she quite masters me. I cannot manage her at all. Pray come and persuade her to go to bed.
Catherine, why didn't you call for me? Shut the window, Evan.
No.
Come, Catherine. Come back to bed, Catherine, dear.
Oh, you are come, are you, Edgar Linton? At last.
But you told me you didn't want to see me. I had no idea.
You are one of those things that are ever found when least wanted, and when you are wanted, never.
But Catherine, you said...
Oh, yes. Yes, I suppose we shall have plenty of lamentations. Ah, but they can't keep me from my narrow home out yonder. My resting place where I'm bound before spring is here. No.
Catherine, what have you done? Am I nothing to you anymore? Do you love that wretched Heathcliff?
Stop! You mention that name and I'll end the matter with a leap from that window. I don't want you, Edgar. I'm past wanting you. Return to your books. I'm glad you possess the consolation for all that you had in me is gone.
Oh. But Mr. Edgar's love for Miss Cathy was such that he credited all she said to the brain fever from which the doctor later said she suffered. Mr. Linton was like a devoted slave at her side day and night. With all the concern over her, it was only natural that we gave little notice to Miss Isabella during those days. But one morning at breakfast, one of the maids, a thoughtless girl who'd been on an early errand to Gimmerton, came panting into the chamber.
Oh, dear, dear.
What man we have next? Master, master, our young lady.
Hold your noisy talk, girl.
Oh. Speak lower, Mary. You might disturb Mrs. Linton. What ails Miss Isabella?
She's gone. She's gone. Yon Heathcliff's run off with her.
Why, that's not true.
Oh, it's true, sir. I met on the road a lad that fetches milk here, and he asked where we weren't in trouble at the Grange. I thought he meant for Mrs. Sickness, so I answered yes. Then, says he, there's somebody gone after him, I guess. He saw I knew nothing about it, so he told how a gentleman and lady had stopped to have a horseshoe fastened at a blacksmith shop. Not long after midnight, he was there, and he got up to spy who they were, and he recognized them both directly. And just now I looked into a room, and she's gone for sure.
Oh, what should we do, sir? Are we to try any measures for overtaking them and bringing her back?
She went of her own accord. She had a right to go if she pleased. Hereafter, she is only my sister in name. Not because I disown her, but because she has disowned me.
For 2 months, we heard nothing from Heathcliff and Miss Isabella. And during that time, Cathy recovered from the worst shock of her brain fever. No mother ever nursed an only child more devotedly than Edgar tended her. I thought myself she might recover, so waited on she was. And there was double cause to desire it, for on her existence depended that of another. We hoped that in a little while Mr. Linton's heart would be gladdened by the birth of an heir. At the end of this 2 month period, I received a note from Miss Isabella. She and Heathcliff had settled at Wuthering Heights, and I must say I considered it an odd letter coming from the pen of a bride just off her honeymoon.
I want to ask you 2 questions, Ellen. The first is, how did you contrive to preserve any semblance of humanity when you lived at Wuthering Heights? I cannot find one bit of kindness in any of these people about me. And now for the second question. Is Heathcliff a man? If so, is he mad? And if not, is he a devil? I shan't tell you my reasons for making this inquiry, but I beseech you to come to see me soon and bring a note from Edgar to me. Tell him I'd give the world to see his face again, that my heart returned to Thrushcross Grange 24 hours after I left it. You must come to see me, Ellen.
I told Mr. Linton about the letter, in part, and that she wanted a note from him, but he said he wanted no communication with Heathcliff's family. So I set out for Wuthering Heights empty-handed. I can't tell you my shock upon seeing Miss Isabella. Her pretty face was wan and listless, her hair uncurled, with locks hanging lankly down. Mr. Heathcliff sat at a table turning over some papers. Isabella came forward eagerly to greet me and held out her hand for the expected letter. I shook my head, but she wouldn't understand.
Ellen, Ellen, you must have...
If you have anything for Isabella, Ellen, give it to her. You needn't make a secret of it. We have no secrets between us.
Ellen!
Truthfully, I have nothing. Oh. My master sends his love, ma'am, but he thinks that his household and the household here should not communicate with each other.
Oh, no. Edgar. Oh, Edgar.
I have forbidden you to mention his name in my house.
Your house, sir?
Why, yes, Ellen. Didn't you know? Hindley has become so in debt to me from gambling, he was forced to sign the house over to me. Stop that infernal sniveling. Ellen, how is your mistress's health?
Mrs. Linton is just now recovering, though she'll never be like she was. And if you have any regard for her, you'll shun crossing her way again.
Oh, no. Before you leave this house, I shall exact a promise that you'll get me an interview with her.
No, Heathcliff.
You must not see her, Mr. Heathcliff. Have you no scruples in completely ruining her restoration by thrusting yourself into her remembrance now when she's nearly forgotten you?
You suppose she has nearly forgotten me? Oh, Ellen, you know she has not. If Edgar Linton loved with all the powers of his puny being, he couldn't love as much in 80 years as I could in a day. And Catherine has a heart as deep as I have. It is not in him to be loved like me. How can she love in him what he has not?
Catherine and Edgar are as fond of each other as any two people can be. I won't hear my brother talked about in that manner.
Yes, your brother is wondrous fond of you, too, isn't he? He turns you adrift on the world with surprising quickness.
He is not aware of what I suffer.
What you suffer?
My young lady is looking sadly the worse for her change of condition. Somebody's love comes short in her case, obviously. Whose, I may guess, but perhaps I should not say.
I should guess it was her own. She degenerates into a mere little tramp. She is tired of trying to please me uncommonly early.
Heathcliff.
Oh, yes. You'd hardly believe it, Ellen. But on the very morrow of our wedding, she was weeping to go home.
Well, sir, I hope you consider that Mrs. Heathcliff is accustomed to being looked after and waited on. And you cannot doubt her strong attachment, else she wouldn't have abandoned the elegances and comforts of her former home to fix herself in such a wilderness as this with you.
She abandoned them under a delusion, picturing in me a hero of romance. But at last I think she begins to know me. I don't perceive the silly smiles and grimaces that provoked me at first. But I don't care who knows. The passion was wholly on one side, and I never told her a lie about it. Now, was it not the depth of absurdity to dream that I could love her?
Stop!
Mr. Heathcliff, this is the talk of a madman.
Take care, Ellen. He's a fiend, a monster. You must promise not to mention a word of what he said to my brother or Catherine. Whatever he may pretend, he wishes to provoke Edgar to desperation. He says he only married me to obtain power over him, and he shan't obtain it. I'll die first. I hope, I pray that he may forget his diabolical prudence and kill me. The single pleasure I can imagine is to die or see him dead.
That will be enough from you for the present. Take a look at her, Ellen. She's not fit to be her own guardian. And I, being your legal protector, Isabella, must tell you what to do. Go upstairs.
No, don't touch
then
me.
Then do as I say. No. Go upstairs.
No.
I have something to say to Ellen Dean in private.
No.
Go, I tell you. There. I have no pity, Ellen. I have no pity. The more the worms writhe, the more I yearn to crush them. Put down your bonnet, Ellen Dean. You're not going yet.
I have no more business here.
I have business with you. I told you I intend to see Catherine once more.
No.
Last night I was in the Grange garden 6 hours. I'll return tonight and every night until you find an opportunity to let me in. If you don't, I shall force my way in, and that would be bad for Catherine,
Ellen.
She's
all nerves. She couldn't bear the surprise.
I want you to tell her I'm coming. Let us settle it now. Will you help me? Or am I to fight my way to her over Linton and his footman?
Well, I argued and complained and flatly refused him 50 times. But in the long run, he forced me to an agreement. I carried a letter to my mistress from him, asking that he might see her. But it was Sunday morning before I found a chance to give it to her. The rest of the household were at church, and since it was such a nice day, we had left the doors open. Mrs. Linton sat in the recess of the window, staring vacantly. I put the letter in her hand.
There's a letter for you, Mrs. Linton. You must read it immediately because it wants an answer. Shall I break the seal?
Yes.
Now, read it. Must I read it, Mum? It's from Mr. Heathcliff.
Heathcliff?
He wishes to see you. He's in the garden by this time and impatient to know what the answer will be.
No. No, he's left the garden. He's come into the house, Ellen. I know. That's his footsteps, Ellen. It is. He's coming.
Kathy.
Neither spoke nor loosed his hold for some 5 minutes, and I plainly saw that he could hardly bear to look into her face. The same conviction had stricken him as me from the instant he beheld her, that there was no prospect of ultimate recovery, that she was fated, sure to die.
Oh, Kathy, oh, my life, how can I bear it?
What now? You and Edgar have broken my heart, Heathcliff. And you both come to bewail the deed to me as if you were the people to be pitied. I shall not pity you. Not I. You have killed me. And thriven on it, I think. How strong you are. How many years do you mean to live after I'm gone?
Oh, Kathy, Kathy.
I wish I could hold you until we were both dead. I shouldn't care what you suffered. I care nothing for your sufferings. Why shouldn't you suffer? I do. But will you forgive me? Will you say 20 years hence, that's the grave of Catherine Earnshaw. I loved her long ago and was wretched to lose her, but it is past. Will you say so, Heathcliff?
Don't torture me till I am as mad as yourself. Don't you know all those words will be branded on my memory and eating deeper eternally after you have left me? You know you lie to say I have killed you.
No.
And, Catherine, you know that I could as soon forget you as my existence. Is it not sufficient for your infernal selfishness that while you are at peace, I shall writhe in torment?
I shall not be in peace. I'm not wishing you greater torment than I have, Heathcliff. I only wish us never to be parted. Come here and kneel down again. You never harm me in your life. Won't you come here again? Do.
Oh, Kathy.
You see, Ellen, he would not relent a moment to keep me out of the grave. That is how I am loved. Never mind. That is not my Heathcliff. I shall love mine and take him with me. He is my soul, and my soul wants to be free. I'm willing to escape into that other world and be there always. Ellen... Helen, you think you are better and more fortunate than I in full health and strength. You are sorry for me. But very soon that shall be altered. I shall be sorry for you. But it will seem strange that Heathcliff won't be near me.
Kathy, Kathy. Now you teach me how cruel you've been. Cruel and false. Why did you despise me? Because I didn't have the money and position Linton had? Why did you betray your own heart? I have not one word of comfort. You deserve this. You have killed yourself. You love me. Then what right had you to choose someone else? Because misery and degradation and death, nothing could have parted us. Yet you of your own will did it. I have not broken your heart. You have broken it. And in breaking it, you have broken mine. So much the worse for me that I am strong. Do I want to live? Oh, would you like to live with your soul in the grave?
Let me alone. Let me alone. If I've done wrong, I'm dying for it. It is enough. You left me too, but I won't upbraid you. I'll forgive you. Forgive me.
It is hard to forgive and to look at those eyes and feel these wasted hands.
Yes.
Kathy, don't let me see your eyes. I forgive what you have done to me. I love my murderer. But yours, how can I?
Please, Mr. Heathcliff, they're returning from church. I can see them from the window. My master will be in the house soon.
Oh.
Heathcliff. No, Heathcliff.
He's entering the house. For heaven's sake, hurry down. Do be quick and stay among the trees till he's fairly in.
I must go, Kathy.
No.
But if I live, I'll see you again before you are asleep. I won't stray 5 yards from your window.
No, you must not go.
For one
you
hour.
You shall not go.
I must.
No, not
Linton
for
will be
one
up immediately.
Minute. No, no, don't go. Don't go. It's the last time. Edgar will not hurt us. Heathcliff, I shall die. I shall die.
Hush, hush, my darling. Hush, Catherine. I'll stay. If he shot me so, I'd expire with a blessing on my lips.
Will you ruin her because she's not wit to help herself? Get up. This is the most diabolical deed you ever did. Oh, we're done for. And she has fainted, or is a dead one.
Ellen, what is all... You treacherous villainous...
Look there. She's fainted. Unless you be a fiend, help her first. Then you shall speak to me.
Oh, Kathy, Kathy.
In his anxiety for Kathy, Edgar forgot her hated friend. And about 12 o'clock that night, a 7-month child was born to Catherine, a little girl. 2 hours later, the mother died. Early that morning, I stole out of the house to the garden, for I knew that I would find Mr. Heathcliff waiting there, and I felt I should tell him. But there was no need.
She's dead. I've not waited for you to learn that. Put your handkerchief away. Don't snivel before me. She wants none of your tears.
She's dead. Gone to heaven, I hope.
Tell me. I want to know. How did she...
Quietly as a lamb. She drew a sigh and stretched herself like a child reviving and sinking again to sleep. 5 minutes after, I felt one little pulse at her heart. And nothing more.
And did she ever mention me?
Her senses never returned. She recognized nobody from the time you left her. She lies with a sweet smile on her face. Her life closed like a gentle dream. May she wake as kindly in the other world.
May she wake in torment.
Oh, no.
Why, she's a liar to the end. Where is she? Not in there. Not in heaven. Not perished. Where? Oh, Kathy, you said you cared nothing for my sufferings. And I pray one prayer. I repeat it till my tongue stiffens. Catherine Earnshaw, may you not rest as long as I am living. You said I killed you. Haunt me, then. Be with me always. Take any form. Drive me mad. Only do not leave me in this abyss where I cannot find you. Oh, I cannot live without my life. I cannot live without my soul.
Wuthering Heights by Emily Bronte is one of the world's great novels brought to you each week by the National Broadcasting Company. We invite you to listen next week to the final episode of Wuthering Heights. And let us remind you, there's a world of entertainment and information to be found in your local public library. To add to your enjoyment of this series, we recommend the Handbook of the World's Great Novels, which you may obtain by sending 25 cents to World's Great Novels, Post Office Box 30, Station J, New York 27, New York. That's Post Office Box 30, Station J, New York 27. Wuthering Heights is adapted for radio by Agnes Eckhart. The music was composed by Emil Soderstrom, and the orchestra was directed by Bernard Berquist. The entire production was under the direction of Homer Heck. Boris Aplon is featured as Heathcliff and Martha McCain as Catherine. Ellen Dean is played by Geraldine Kay, Isabella by Florine Sears, Edgar Linton by John Cannon, Lockwood by Jonathan Cole, and The Servant by Doris Grundy. This is John Conrad. This program comes to you from Chicago and is a presentation of the National Broadcasting Company and its affiliated independent stations. Tuberculosis is a deadly disease, but it can be eliminated by prompt and effective action on the part of the individual and the community. You can protect yourself and prevent the spread of tuberculosis by having a chest X-ray today. Do your part to fight tuberculosis. This is NBC, the National Broadcasting Company.